All right. Good morning. Welcome to the last day of TechEd at this incredibly early hour of the day. So thank you very much for actually attending this session. There's only one worse session slot you can get. That's Friday afternoon, the latest one. So I'm really excited that you guys showed up. And it's kind of cool because you have like a way better chance right now to let me see if I can get this working here. You have a very good chance to actually come up with Illumia. So that's pretty cool. Why don't I see anything on the screen? Let's see. I think my camera just dropped out of me. Let me try that again. Ah, there we go. Cool. So today's session is all about performance, and I had one motivation to actually take this session. And the reason why I want to, share my experiences in this session is because of this. I took an existing application. I'm just going to start that application right now. And it's kind of hard to see, but what you see is a kind of a splash screen. There's a progress indicator in there. We're waiting quite a while. And the only amount of data I just pulled from a web service is, like a few songs, and that's about it. So I did not really understand why there was a progress indicator, why it took so long to actually load. So I had the idea like, hey, there must be a way to do this better. And so, not being arrogant, I decided to write my own Last.fm application, and this was my first attempt. So yeah, there's again a splash screen because it's kind of cool to have a splash screen, like you know exactly immediately what that application is about. Now, I'm loading data. I'm using a panorama view here. I'm loading data. I'm loading data. I'm loading data. There's no progress indicator visible whatsoever, but I'm still loading. Ah, and there's some data coming in, and there are pictures way later. Now, the cool part is, though, that I have way more data. The less cool part is that my UI is kind of iffy because the sizes of those images is different. So this is kind of the worst situation you would expect from a performance point of view if I'm going to scroll through these different lists of tracks. But I ended up with something like this, and I'm loading, no splash screen anymore, and boom, there's my information, and that's a list of 200 tracks immediately. So each step that I took to actually get this application to its final stage, that's the main topic of today's presentation. And I'm going to, of course, also give you some general guidelines on how to improve application performance. My name is Maarten Struijs. I'm working for a company called Alten PTS here in the Netherlands, so that's my funny accent there. And let's just go ahead and let's get started. So what I want to do is talk about performance in general for devices. Also talk about why it's so extremely important to think about performance, especially on phones, for instance. But also, it's also applicable to, Windows 8 tablet machines or something like that. I'm going to talk about some obvious performance improvement lessons. So things that you probably as a C# or VB developer should know, but not always, keep things in mind. We're also going to talk specifically about some XAML-related performance challenges. And then we're going to extend it a little bit and really deep dive into what more things can you do in order to get better performance out of your application. It's going to be a trade-off between how much memory are you going to use, how much processing power are you going to use, and with that, how much you're going to drain the battery. But it's also like, how maintainable will my code stay if I'm taking all these performance tips and tricks that I'm talking about today? If you take them all into consideration, you might end up with very fast, unmaintainable code, and that's a trade-off as well. So you have to think about that too. What's the life cycle of my application? And then at the end of the 75 minutes, I'm going to ask a question, and the first person answering that question right, and it's related to the talk, might be able to get home with a Nokia Lumia 900. They gave this device to me yesterday, and they said I had to give it out today, but it was tempting, like last night I thought, like, what if I ask myself a question right now? Then I have a brand new cool device. But that's not how it works. But you have to stay till the end of the session, of course, in order to be able to win that phone. So, performance, it's very, very important. And the funny part is performance is especially important on devices, on portable devices like phones. And that's kind of unfair if you think about it. I mean, if you think about a desktop system with a multi-core processor and with, you know, like tons of memory in there, I still think it's okay if I'm booting Windows 7. If that takes like a minute or so, I don't really care about that. But now think about the fact that I want to use my phone. Well, it has to be instantly on, so the phone has to have a standby capability, because it would be completely unacceptable for that phone to actually take a minute until I would be able to make a phone call. Or even worse, if it would take a minute until I could answer the phone, because the person on the other end of my conversation would hang up already before that time. So performance is extremely important on those devices with lesser processing power and lesser memory. And as a matter of fact, I think that we are thinking about phones more as, you know, like light switches or something. If you switch on the light, you don't want to wait for a minute as well. Well, with phones, it's the same thing. Now, at the same time, even though the the resources, processor, memory on the phone are less than on a desktop or on a laptop computer, they're still pretty powerful. I mean, compared to the original IBM PC, a Windows phone is a pretty powerful device with a separate GPU and CPU. But you also have to think that we're also battery feeding those devices. So if I'm executing lots and lots and lots of code, it will just mean that I'm going to drain the battery. So I have to really think about that as well. Now, performance is influenced by a lot of things on a Windows phone. It depends on what code am I executing right now and where am I executing that code. Am I doing fancy graphics? Am I doing graphics that are, you know, like not tuned for optimal performance? Am I using a lot of data, and am I binding that data to UI elements? Andy Wickley is going to talk later today, actually the session after this one, about using MVVM as a pattern to develop Windows Phone applications that are maintainable, that are completely loosely coupled as far as UI and functionality is concerned. But at the same time, he's going to talk about data binding, and with data binding, so binding data to visible elements, what you're going to do is execute code that you're not aware of, and those are performance influences as well. So what you need to find is a trade-off between architecting an application very, very well, but at the same time be realistic and optimize for performance. And generally speaking, for a phone, if you don't have to do anything, just don't. So less is more. If you don't need to execute code, don't execute code. If it's not necessary to present a splash screen, don't show that splash screen. Just go immediately onwards. So those are things that are just very important, but also very, very generic remarks, actually. What is also important is, if you think about performance, if you start a new project, it would be great if you would be able to think about performance from day one onwards. And it's kind of hard, of course, but for instance, we all have a feeling that an application on a phone should start, for instance, within 1 second, or maybe within 500 milliseconds. Well, write that down. Make that a functional requirement of your application. And when you start coding, when you start realizing the functionality, continuously measure if you still meet that goal, that within 1 second your application should be up and running. If on one day your performance is great, and on one day later you have, you know, like a drop in performance, you know that the amount of code that you were just adding is a performance influencer, which hopefully is not that much code, so hopefully you can still, you know, like identify kind of easily why all of a sudden you hit some performance issues. So what you need to do if you are thinking about performance is test on devices, and do that frequently. Do that daily if you are doing nightly builds, and be aware of regression. So be aware, if you add functionality, that your performance is influenced, and that performance on some specific areas might actually be influenced. So that's very, very important there. Another thing with Windows Phone 7.5, and I'm mainly targeting Windows Phone 7.5 here today in this talk, with, you know, like one or two remarks already towards Windows Phone 8, but not definitely not in details. But what you need to think about is that we now in Windows Phone 7.5 have 512 megabyte devices and 256 megabyte devices. And for an end user, they should kind of behave the same. Now, of course, a 256 megabyte device has less functionality available. It, for instance, it doesn't have background processing, so the background, the periodic tasks are not available on a 256 megabyte device. But you can use push notifications, so stuff like that for an end user, it should be the same. At the same time, on a device that has less memory, you have to be aware that if your application is kind of large, it will influence the rest of that device. It will probably disable fast application switching sooner, so applications have to be tombstone faster. So what you want to do also from a performance point of view is test on, well, maybe two different devices, a 512 and a 256 megabyte device, or at least use the emulator for some initial tests. Now, you have to be careful with the emulator, though, because the emulator performs completely different from a device. Reason for that is even though we emulate ARM code on the emulator, the resources on your development machine are completely different from those resources on a physical device, so you always have to test on real devices as well. But initially, if you want to see if your application simply runs on a 256 megabyte device, make sure you download the latest SDK tools, because now you have two emulators, one for 512 and one for 256. Another thing, and I'm going to show performance today, so I'm going to sin against everything I'm saying here today during my demos, because what you also want to do is test in real scenarios. So if you have a network connection, probably I have a high-speed network connection here, which, you know, like if you look at TechEd this day, it's kind of a miracle because nobody had a network connection. But I have a wired connection here, which is pretty decent today. So that's kind of cool. But it's not a realistic scenario if I'm pulling, you know, like a lot of data from the cloud or something, because what would be a realistic scenario would be connected through my mobile network. So use a mobile operator's network to pull my data down, and maybe not with the best data connection, but with an average data connection, because all those things are influencing speed as well. So you have to be realistic about that. Also, if I'm thinking about performance, if I'm executing performance tests, make sure that you build in that you use release builds for those tests. And run dtest from the debugger, because if you're running a test from the debugger and do not do anything else, then you get some performance counters, which in itself are very cool, but each time you're measuring performance, you're also influencing performance. So at the end of the day, you want to test as an application, as an end user is actually using it. Now, there are many things that are influenced, that will influence the performance of your application. And one of the most important things for an end user is the application startup time. It's the first time that a user meets your application. If they have to wait long, then probably their experience is not that positive. They probably, you know, like rate your application a little lower. But if you have a great startup time, well, that's kind of cool, because then the first impression of the user is a positive one, and they hopefully stay in that positive mind there. So what's going to happen during initialization? Well, your XAML has to be parsed. Parsing XAML sounds like, hey, I'm opening a file, I'm kind of interpreting that file, and I'm, you know, like creating objects accordingly to that XAML that I created. So if I can make that XAML shorter, smaller, tinier, then that would influence my startup time. Another thing is initialization code. From the time your application starts until the page loaded event on the first page that's visible in your application, in that time code will be executed and XAML will be parsed. Well, in that time, nothing is visible on your screen except if you choose for a splash screen, because then that splash screen becomes visible because that's part of that initialization code. So sometimes it might actually be useful to use splash screens. Other times, it seems that, you know, like if you have a fast-starting application and you have a splash screen in that fast-starting application, the splash screen is actually delaying starting your application. So your application could be way faster without that splash screen. So you have to really think about, do you want to use a splash screen, yes or no? The threading model of a Windows Phone application also influences performance. There's one very, very important thread inside a Windows Phone application. That's the UI thread. It's just a thread that's executing code, but it's the only thread that has capabilities of updating the user interface. And again, the funny part is, so there's one thread that updates all user interface elements, meaning that it could easily block and easily get, you know, like very, very busy. And it's at the same time the most important thread, because updating UI elements, those are the things that users actually see inside our application. And for end users, the idea of performance is, what do I see and when do I see it? How fast is my action being executed after I click or hit that button or something? So that's important. Also, if I'm doing lots of animations, well, you have to think about, is an animation useful? Because an animation is not only draining the battery, but it might, especially if you have, you know, like kind of a complex animation, it might influence the activity that you're executing on your UI thread, because sometimes the GPU cannot entirely execute animations, and there you have a performance hit. UI model in general is kind of important to think about. Are you making use of virtualization, or in other words, am I only displaying the elements that are visible right now and discarding of invisible elements or not? Am I maybe executing animations with an opacity set to zero, so hidden animations? Well, that's kind of scary, because they will execute and they will actually drain battery and influence performance, and nobody can see them. So you have to be very, very careful about that. What kind of data connections do I have? Can I always depend on a high-speed data connection? Well, probably not, because we're talking about a Windows phone. And phones in general, that's not exclusive for Windows phone, but if you have a data connection, you're kind of lucky. That's your paradigm you have to take, you know, like, so I don't have a data connection unless I'm very, very lucky. Well, that, guess what? That data connection is going to influence your performance there. There was this trend, you know, like, especially when Windows Phone was released initially, that we all wanted to use cool UI elements. I've seen many, many applications, including the first one I was showing to you, where they're using a panorama, and you should wonder, like, is that really functional to have that there? The People Hub is a great example of a panorama that's very functional. Each and everybody's contact list is, you know, like, probably not containing, like, millions or billions of contacts, so the amount of data is limited. The amount of types of data in that contact list is kind of limited, so the panorama has, like, three or four different views. So that's kind of cool. The Picture Hub is a kind of a cool panoramic view as well. But many, many of our applications have panoramic views that might not always be useful, and we're just developing them or implementing them, inserting them in our application, because we think those controls are cool, and that would be a wrong approach, actually. So if you have the choice between a panorama or a pivot control, well, guess what? A panorama control needs to load all data, also the data that's invisible, in order to function. A pivot only gets the data when a pivot page becomes visible. Now, what that means is that in a pivot, when you show the next tab of a pivot, there might be a little glitch, because some data has to be initialized and displayed on the screen. But initially, a pivot will be way, way faster. If you're making use of a list box, the default situation is that we get a virtualizing stack panel. In that stack panel, you have repetitive elements that make up your list box. And what that means is that the operating system, the Windows Phone bits, take like up to 10 elements from our list. They keep them resident in memory, and everything outside that number of elements is just discarded, meaning that I'm limiting the amount of memory I'm using, but also meaning that if a user scrolls through the list, that we need to pull out more elements to that list, discard the not visible elements anymore, and add the new elements to our visual tree. So that takes a little bit of time. But there, you're going to use less memory. So that's kind of a trade-off. So if you have a few items to be displayed in a list box, and as a rule of thumb, typically they're saying like 200 or less, then you might consider using a stack panel instead of a virtualizing stack panel. If you have long lists, just take the default and take a virtualizing stack panel. I'm going to show later what that means for your XAML, how to create a stack panel or how to create a list box using stack panels or virtualizing stack panels. If you have images, that's another thing. Typically, I mean, our device resolutions today, so we're not talking about Windows Phone 8 here, but about Windows Phone 7.5. So we have a resolution of 800 by 480. Now, if I'm using a high-res image, what's going to happen is that image needs to be scaled down to that resolution. Let's say I want to display a picture full size on the screen. It doesn't make sense to make that image of a higher resolution than 480, 800 by 480. So it would be way better to actually reduce the size of that image. The image becomes smaller, we're going to use less memory, and the image will be displayed faster on the screen. So that's a win-win situation there. There has been whole debates about progress bars. So version 1 of Windows Phone shipped with a progress bar, and it turned out that the progress bar, if it was set in an indefinite mode, it was being so inefficient that it was actually influencing performance really, really badly. And now, if you think about it, that's kind of stupid, isn't it? I mean, we're using a progress bar to indicate to the user, like, hey, we are doing something that's going to take quite some time. Therefore, we give you this nice visual dot impersonation of, hey, we are wasting time. And literally, the developer who created that was wasting time because they were running on the UI thread. Well, that UI thread needed to do some other things. It couldn't do that because it needed to display the progress bar as well. So instead of, you know, like loading something within 1 second or something, making use of the progress bar made that loading time double. So then in the Windows Phone Silverlight Toolkit, there was the performance progress bar. Well, that had some issues, it turned out, because if you set that on indefinite and make it invisible, it was still consuming the processor. So that's not the greatest thing, too. And then you had that last thing, the progress indicator, which is actually part of the status on top of your Windows Phone screen. And that's the most efficient one. So you have to think, for starters, like, do I want to show progress information? Because each time I'm showing something on the screen, if I'm animating or something, I'm using processor time, meaning my performance will degrade. So progress bars are interesting things. You always need to use common sense, actually. So what I said before, if you have animations that are hidden, well, don't execute them. Now, the obvious thing is, if I would set the opacity of some animation to zero, that animation will still execute, so it's still, you know, like wasting time. But there are less obvious things that are really important there as well. If I have a panoramic control, and if I'm executing some animation on one of my panorama pages, well, and if I'm just continuing, you know, like continuously executing that animation, even if that panorama page is not visible, the animation will execute. Now, if I have hundreds of pages in my panel, and if I all have animations on there, well, then you can imagine what's going to happen. That's really, really, really bad there, right? So what you need to do is make sure that you know when a page becomes visible and only then start an animation. When that page becomes invisible again, stop the animation temporarily. Don't execute code that influences the UI if the user cannot see that influence of that particular UI. If you have a cool, let's say a cool graphics, and you went to a designer maybe and said, like, hey, I need, you know, like, I need a spaceship, and that spaceship needs some very, very cool coloring, etc., and that designer uses XAML to actually create that graphic. So what you get back would be, you know, like maybe a couple of kilobytes of XAML code. And it's just a perfect graphic image explained or described in XAML. Well, if you would want to make use of that, think about it, that XAML needs to be interpreted. That's going to take a long, long time. So better if a designer hands you over some XAML and that XAML is just representing a static image, what you could do is run that particular piece of XAML on the emulator, take a screenshot, that screenshot results in a JPEG file, and use that JPEG file instead, because that image is going to be static anyway. So if you have the choice, if you have static information, show JPEGs. Don't code it out in XAML, for instance. The same, let's say you need some mapping information. Well, if you're using Bing Maps, for instance, today, you can make use of the full map control, which is a heavyweight control, which does a lot, which contains a lot of functionality, but which downloads information in small tiles, and you can scroll through it, you can zoom, and blah, 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 blah. Well, if you don't need that, if you just want to have a little piece of a map, what you also can do with Bing, for instance, is make use of REST APIs and just get that little bit of mapping information that you need. It's going to be a static map, but it's going to be loading faster, it's going to use less memory on your device, so it's more efficient. Good programming practice, that's another one. the classic thing, if you're a managed developer, if you're using C#, when we started using C# back in 2000 or something, we were always saying, like, hey, it's so cool, we have string objects now, something we didn't really have in C as a language, because we had character pointers, and we had all kinds of C library methods that, you know, like, you could concatenate two strings with each other. And in C# we said, like, hey, that's pretty cool, we now have the possibility to add two strings together. And if you add two strings together, that's kind of okay-ish. But if you add 2 million strings together, what happens to happen, what's the end result of adding strings together is that if I'm adding two strings together, I need a third string to store that result in and then move that back to the one I'm assigning to or something. So I'm creating temporary strings. I'm doing that frequently, and at some time, what's going to happen is that, hey, I'm allocating so much temporary objects that the garbage collector kicks in. It's going to collect garbage. With that, it's stopping execution of the entire application, so I'm wasting time. And it turned out that, especially with strings, that's a very, very expensive operation, and it happened frequently that we needed intermediate results stored in temporary strings. So for that, if you need to add a couple of strings together, make use of the string builder, which is a way more efficient mechanism for that. And then probably people are going to say, like, yeah, but I'm only adding two strings together, who cares? Yeah, but probably you're doing that, you know, like a couple of times, maybe in a while loop or something. And even, you know, like if you can save a couple of processor instructions, you know, like during the course of an action, well, at the end of the day, you're saving a lot of time. With that, you're saving a lot of power because your battery lasts longer and your user will be happier because you're, you know, like executing code faster. Other thing that's also important is, hey, if you are using event handlers, so I'm just, you know, like subscribing to some event, maybe a loaded event or something. If you don't need that event handler anymore, make sure to unsubscribe from it. Otherwise, the garbage collector cannot collect your garbage because there's still links to that particular object in memory available. So those are things that are important. To measure performance, well, you need to understand how your application is going to start up. So the startup experience of your application, what I said before already, it should be part of your functional requirements to say, like, hey, I want to have my application starting maybe within a second or something. But also take a look at your startup code and take a look at what actually is executing. Very, very important. Also, make sure that you know that your application will run on 256 megabyte devices. Because if you don't do that, 256 megabyte devices are not our primary target device. I mean, everybody's telling us, like, hey, you need to, you know, like, you need to develop your applications that they run great on 512, and they probably will run on 256. But if your application won't run on 256, like Skype, for instance, well, that's pretty bad, actually, because you're losing a huge market in a today not too big market to begin with. So you want to have all devices being able to run your applications. If you are, you know, like initially taking a look at an application, let's say we forgot about making performance or functional requirements, so we have this bad performing application, how can we get that better? Well, make use of the performance counters. Take a look at a running application, take a look at screen updates, are they going frequent, are they going, you know, like kind of sluggish or something. So that's your first step. I'm going to show that step later on during the demos, actually. And make sure to always test on real devices. If you don't have real devices, it's not like device emulator is useless for performance testing, because what you can see is trends in performance, so performance improvements or performance degradations, you can see them. So if something runs today on device emulator, it runs pretty slow, and if I change something in my code, it's probably going to, you know, like execute faster anyway. The only thing is, the behavior on the device might be completely different, because devices are different from the emulator. And typically what we used to see is that emulators were always way slower than real devices. So in the past I always had an excuse at my boss, like, hey, I need a real device because, you know, like I'm more productive, I'm more efficient because the emulator executes code slow. Today it's a little bit different. Typically emulators are outperforming devices because our development machines are so incredibly fast these days. Now, if you want to measure performance, there are just a very few simple tools that you can use immediately. The easiest thing to do is make sure that you have a debugger attached and take a look at those performance counters. but not take a look at all of them. What's kind of important is the composition thread frames per second, the user interface thread frames per second, and if they are too low, so if a user will experience performance problems because of a too occupied user interface thread performance, those counters turn into red. The other one that might be important is the screen fill rate counter, which is an indicator of how much updates we're going to do on the screen. Another thing I like to do is make use of the memory diagnostic helper that Peter Thor wrote, because that is an indicator of how much memory my application is using. And actually, it also asserts when I'm reaching 90 megabytes. And 90 megabytes is a limit. If you reach over that limit, you're not automatically, you know, you cannot automatically get your application certified. Now, those performance counters need some numbers, you know, like it's kind of cool to show counters, but what do they really mean? Well, it's also like probably we're not going to have the best experience out of a performance counter, which would be 60 frames per second for instance, for a render thread, because then we are updating our UI with 60 frames per second, which means that a user doesn't see any blinking in a screen update. It's almost movie quality in that time. But if your render thread runs on 30 frames per second, and if your UI thread runs on 15 frames per second, that's the area, if we get even lower, then the user going to start notice, you know, like performance issues with your application. So that's something you really want to keep in mind. Run first with those counters. Make sure those counters are visible. Of course, I'm going to show them, but then, you know, like my it's kind of hard to read them, especially on that screen here. So hopefully, you know, I'm going to try and give you some indication there. So let's just take a look at our application and let me see how we can do something on improving our performance. Startup time. And for that, let me just go to my... And for that, let me switch on my development machine, which just fell asleep. How nice is that? So let me make sure that we have that visible there. Okay, and here we are. Let me also turn on my device again. And let's hope that we have a connection between the two. And what I have is that same LastFM application. And the first thing I'm going to do is just run the application. I'm just going to run it from inside Visual Studio. I have the debugger attached, but I'm going to go to a Windows Phone device. So what's going to happen right now is I'm going to start the application. And once the application is up and running, well, I hope that that would not happen. So let me not continue. Let's make sure that... What is a Tekkit without demo issues? That would be nothing. That would be... So let me try this again. Okay. Here we go. Let me make sure that we have a connection right now. It looks like I might have. Zoom thinks that I'm connected, so let me try that again. Okay, I'm connecting to that device. We are deploying the application. Let me switch to here right now. So the application comes up. Here's that beautiful splash screen that is completely functional because it really gives an indication of what the application is doing, right? And now we are loading information. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to switch back to this development machine, actually, because something's going to happen. And it's kind of hard to show everything simultaneously, so I'm just waiting and waiting. And there I have, I have a debug assert, as you can see. So what's happening is something is going wrong here. And what happened is I'm using Peter Thor's diagnostic tool to measure memory. And if you look at my peak memory right now, you can see that I have 103 megabytes allocated, which is pretty much for 200 different tracks of information, of play tracks. So using this tool is actually kind of cool because it asserts at the moment that I would not fulfill marketplace requirements anymore. And I'm pretty sure that even though I'm not at 256 megabyte right now, but users on a 256 megabyte device, if this application would be certified, would be extremely unhappy with me. And I'm asserting, meaning that even though I already have some data available, probably my amount of memory would still increase. So this is something I definitely have to fix later on. But for now, I'm just going to leave that. Because I'm going to show you that this application will, in fact, simply run, continue loading if I'm removing that assert. I know I have an issue right now. I know where that issue is kind of occurring. So what I'm going to do is run the application again. But now I want to make sure that I'm going to continue executing. And by the way, it's very easy to use that diagnostic tool that Peter Thor wrote, because the only thing you basically need to do is add the following statement. I'm just going to use a static method in the memory diagnostics helper, and I'm going to specify a time. In that diagnostic helper, there is a timer ticking, and each time that timer expires, it's just going to take the current amount of memory and use in my application. So using this initially is a great tool, but be aware, since there's a timer, it's regularly executing code. Once you know that you're not under memory pressure, immediately get rid of this one. And so it's a first indication. Okay, I'm going to execute again. And I'm not going to show what's happening on the device, because I'm going to point you to something that's happening here inside my Visual Studio environment. So I'm going to run the application again. This time the application will continue running, and I'm going to tap my screen as well. And there's a reason for doing that. I'm going to explain that later when we are going to, you know, like take a look at the debug output. So what's happening is I now have a panorama visible. I tapped on my screen and you see a tap in my debug output. Once I have data visible, and you have to believe me, I'm tapping again. And then once I have images visible, I'm tapping again. So what's happening here? Now I'm going to terminate my application one more time. I'm going to explain what I just did. And this is sort of a chicken and egg problem. I first have to show it and then explain what I'm actually doing here, because I'm not even using fancy tools here. So we're going to stop debugging. And what I'm going to do is actually take a look at my output window here. And let me make sure that we can all see that, kind of. So what is happening is I get some additional diagnostic information. I'm saying that, hey, my application is initializing, and it took like 6.9 seconds to initialize. Another thing is that I have track information available inside my application, and I have that track information available after 8 seconds. So initializing took 6.9 seconds. Beginning retrieving tracks started at 6.7 seconds. It took me 2 seconds to get some track information. My panorama was visible after 8.7 seconds, because I was just tapping on the screen, and tapping on the screen just resulted in me doing a debug write line so that I could keep track of some stuff. I have more tracks available after 11 seconds, but all those tracks were only visible after 17 seconds. So I had tracks already downloaded, but it still took me 7 additional seconds to display those tracks. So definitely I have a lot of performance issues inside this application. Now, the way I did this is I just added some more diagnostics. So what I created myself is a diagnostic helper. And inside this diagnostic helper, and I will make this code available actually, but the only thing I'm doing is indicate when my application is starting, then I'm storing the number of ticks at starting time of my application. And each time I want to do something, I'm just calling this mark method. And in this mark method, I'm just writing a line in the output window. And I'm also showing the time with it. So this is an indication when something happens on my screen without having the need to use a profiler. And the reason why I don't want to use the profiler continuously, that's a thing that I'm going to show later. What we saw in that output window, actually, is that it took like 6 seconds for my application to start. Now, that's pretty bad. That's a long time. So let's try and find out if we can fix that right away. Now, it has to do with application start. So probably in my startup code, something interesting is going on. So let me quickly go full screen here. And what you can see here is that we have some ultra secret code. And that's probably, you know, like that must be an indicator that something is going on there. And this is code I really have seen in production. So in my startup method, what's happening is that I'm executing a thread sleep 4000. The reason why you would want to do that is to actually prevent your main page from being displayed. One of the news groups, no, multiple news groups, we frequently get questions like, hey, I have invested in such a cool splash screen. But my application is so fast that I don't see the splash screen. Is there anything we can do about that? Now, no question is stupid. I have to say that immediately. But some answers are pretty interesting because I have seen answers being given, and it wasn't me. That, well, you can do that. You know what you do? The only thing you need to do is go to the constructor of your app object and add a sleep there. Well, what are you doing there? You're gonna actually, you know, like, the only thing you're doing there is delaying your application artificially because somebody has a cool splash screen. My suggestion would be like, hey, if your splash screen is so cool, create an application, call it splash screen, publish it on Marketplace, and make that the purpose of your application. Don't do anything else. So the first thing is this ultra secret code can just go away right now, which is cool. The next thing, I don't necessarily like splash screens because a splash screen is, you know, like if you need a splash screen, then there's a reason for that because I'm doing too much, I'm executing too much code or whatever. So I just don't like using splash screens, so I'm going to get rid of that splash screen. So let me just go ahead and do that. Getting rid of a splash screen is very easy. If you know where the delete button of your on your keyboard is, you just select it in your solution and delete it. As a result, I don't have to display a splash screen, so my application is starting faster. So this is kind of cool, actually. And there was another thing, and that was hard to see for you guys, but you need to believe that from me. If I take a look in my main page, and let's go full screen here again, then there's something else that is interesting and going on. Is it now? Well, hopefully it's hardly to see, but you see an indicator here. Let me make this a little bigger. Then you can see it. See those dots there? That's a progress indicator. That's the good old-fashioned progress indicator. Now I know I've studied my MSDN Windows Phone documentation. I know that I shouldn't use a progress indicator. So maybe we should get rid of this one. I'm going to copy this binding here because that's something that might be useful for later use. So, Control-C. And what I'm instead going to use is the following. I'm going to make use of a shell system tray progress indicator. And inside that progress indicator, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say that the is indeterminate, I'm going to set that to true. And the other thing I'm going to do is the is visible. Actually, I'm going to use that binding there. Control V. And I need to close this down. Boom. Now, since I'm now working with a progress indicator that is part of the system tray, what I also want to do is make sure that the system tray is going to be visible. So initially and default, it's always said that the system tray is set to false. I'm going to set it to true. Now, as an added bonus, I don't need that performance progress bar anymore. And this is the only element from the Silverlight toolkit inside my application. And typically, I'm a lazy developer, so typically I would not do anything. I would just, you know, like leave everything else in there. But if you're working on performance, what you really need to do is get as little information as possible, for instance, in your XAML. Because if I just remove this, then that XAML does not have to be interpreted anymore. So my application startup is going to be faster. The progress bar is a Silverlight control. To hide it or to make it visible, you need to set the visibility property. I was using data binding because I created an MVVM application. My application is an MVVM application. It's using data binding, but I needed a converter to convert a Boolean to a visibility property. Well, since I'm now using not a Silverlight control anymore, because you can see that right now. The progress indicator is not a Silverlight control, but it's a shell control. So its visibility indicator is a Boolean. What that means is I don't need that converter anymore, so I can get rid of this converter as well. So just changing a very simple control, you can see that I'm cleaning up my XAML already dramatically. Now, let's see if this is still compiling. And build failed. Because converters is now unknown. Yes, because I don't have any converters anymore. Cool. Let's see if it's now compiling. That looks way better. But I can even clean further. So if I go out of full screen now. Because what you will see in my application is I have a MVVM application with a view model. Inside that view model, there's a converter class. Well, I can get rid of that because this thing only had a bool to visibility converter. Since I'm not using that anymore, well, let me just delete it. Cool. And then the next thing I can do, since I'm not using the Silverlight toolkit anymore, I'm also going to delete this reference. Because what that means is that my assembly will get smaller, and with that, eventually, my application will start faster. So just changing one control into something else has a big impact in the rest of my application, but it's going to be a positive impact. But my message is don't leave things that you're not using in your application, because that's important too, because that will help your application perform better. So if we're running the application now again, and let me just go to show that application when it's starting, you're still going to see that it's not ideal. Am I? Oops. You're still going to see that it's not ideal. Oh, come on. I'm too fast. So this machine here clearly has a performance issue. Let's see. One more time. That one should be ready now. And now it should be queued there. Cool. So let me do that again. I'm going to start the application. There we go. We are starting. Immediately you get a progress indicator. And this is already kind of acceptable. Now, I still have a lot of issues because that data is still loaded in a very, very slow way. But I see that panorama immediately appearing. It's kind of okay-ish already, and we can improve this way better still. But before we're going to do that, let's just go back to the slide deck real quick. And let's talk about some other things. So, let me see if I got this completely right now. This should be a slide deck, yay. So, one of the things that is not entirely, you know, like important anymore, although it's very important, but since we closed down the 7 Windows Phone 7 marketplace, I kind of assume that there are not many Windows Phone 7 applications hanging around anymore. But if you never updated your application to run on Windows Phone 7.5, you still want to do that. There's a reason for that, because the transition from Windows Phone 7 to Windows Phone 7.5, we got a way better JIT compiler and a better behaving garbage collector. So the common language runtime changed significantly, and simply recompiling a 7 application for 7.5 could easily gain you 25% to 30% performance gain, which is pretty cool. The other thing, and I'm not going to show that today because, you know, like if you're talking about performance and all of its implications, you should talk, you know, like probably a whole day. It should have been a pre-conf session about performance, but unfortunately it wasn't. But I'm not going to talk about tombstoning and fast application switching, but you have to be aware that you need to do things for that as well from a performance point of view. So if my application goes to the background, and that happens frequently, if the end user brings my application back to the foreground, they immediately want to continue working with that application. So think about what data do you need to cache, what data can you maybe, you know, like retrieve from the cloud again, what is the implication of that, because there might be data costs involved with that. So there's many, many things you have to think about not just from a performance point of view, but also from a battery usage point of view, but also from a cost point of view. Like, am I continuously calling out to a cloud? Well, then the data plan of the user is probably going to be influenced, and they might not be happy about that. So many things you have to think about. Also, understand how the common language runtime works. So we are creating Silverlight applications. Well, a Silverlight application is a managed application. A managed application has this wonderful feature that we don't have to worry about any garbage we are creating, because there's a garbage collector that will collect it for us. What Microsoft basically is saying, like, hey, you developers, we don't trust you. We don't trust you cleaning up garbage. And let us do that for you. And that's a cool idea, because, you know, like in C and C++, one of the most frequently made mistakes or bugs is actually leaking memory. But in managed code, you can leak memory as well by, you know, like still attaching to objects that you don't use anymore. Well, if you're doing that, then the garbage collector has a harder time checking which objects it can delete. So it's going to take longer for the garbage collector to actually collect garbage, because the more objects it has to inspect, the more time it takes. And the bad part is, garbage collection can only occur when everything freezes inside our application. So if you have garbage that needs to be collected, then you have an issue. Also, if you have large objects for the garbage collector are treated differently. They are created on a different heap, and it's even more expensive to actually collect garbage on that particular heap. So be aware of things like that. If you want to have most performance out of an application at a certain time, and that would be something, for instance, for a high-end Silverlight game type of thing or something, the other thing you need to know is that garbage collection will only occur when you try to create a new object. So if I have a type and I create an instance of it, that's the trigger for the garbage collector to check, like, hey, do I have 1 megabyte of live objects currently? If not, nothing happens. If that's the case, then I'm going to garbage collect. So if you have a game loop, and if you need to do, or if you have a loop in general where you need to execute a lot of code, make sure that you're not creating new objects in that loop. So pre-allocate and post throw things away. That's very good for performance. It might not be the best practice for the amount of memory you're using. So again, you're working with trade-offs here, right? And there are some great tools that really help you identify some of the issues you're running in, and those are the performance analysis tools. So we have a memory profiler and a code profiler that are available as part of Visual Studio, and you can start profiling your code from within Visual Studio. It's a fantastic tool because it shows you lots of information, but at the same time, there are a few things that hopefully in a next version they're going to think about, because what's happening right now is, if I want to do an execution profiling session or something, I have to start at the beginning. So I'm going to start profiling, my application is going to start, it's going to collect data, and it's going to collect data until I quit the application, and it's going to collect a lot of data. So this is great if you have short sessions where you start your application, stop your application, invest your data. If you don't have to do too much things in between, then it's working. But what I would like is a profiler in which I could say, like, hey, I have a method that is suspect. I'm going to use, you know, like, maybe a compiler attribute or anything, and I'm going to say only for this piece of code I want to have profiling active and not for the whole initialization stuff or something. Unfortunately, that's not possible. So that's something we have to keep in mind. Also, the way they report is in a graphics manner, and they try to, you know, like, give us all kinds of intelligence about the patterns that are recognized in that graph. Sometimes they give hints like, hey, performance is, you know, like, bad, caused by probably this and this and this. That's not always the right information that's given there. But having said that, it's still a great tool, the profiler, to get some, you know, like, some information out of your application. So what I'm going to do is run my application again, but now this time we're going to do that with the profiler. So let me go to my development machine here. And what I'm going to do is just exactly start the same application, but I'm going to start it now from the debug menu, and I'm starting a Windows Phone performance analysis. And the first thing you always want to do is do an execution profiling and get a rough indication of what's going on inside your application. So I'm going to launch my application in this way right now. Just because we can, I could be, you know, like showing that application. Let's see. We are now starting the application. And then the application is actually up and running inside my device. Because I'm profiling now, I'm influencing performance because, you know, like snapshots are taken of what is going on. So my performance is going to be a little bit slower, but that's kind of okay. And I decided that, hey, you know, like once I have images visible on my screen here, I'm just going to stop profiling again. And now what we're doing is, since we just stopped profiling, we are collecting data. That data was collected on the device. We're transferring that data back to the development machine. And there, the log file is going to be parsed and interpreted and visualized inside Visual Studio. So that's what's happening right now. Then we're immediately going to go full screen because I want to show you what kind of content there is here. So hopefully, come on, hurry up. We only have 20 more minutes. And it's a profiling talk, so it better be fast, right? But it's turning out to be a little slow now. So this is my problem. I already collected so much data, and I only was running my application for like a minute or so. So it would have been cooler to pinpoint what really is going on. Anyway, here is the information we collected out of this profiling session. And the initial display is kind of interesting because they don't show everything. So what you immediately need to do is make sure that you get, you know, like more information visible. And what's happening is, see some interesting behavior here that I don't even see CPU usage. Now, I've never seen this before. How cool is that? I guess not, but. So what you could almost imply here, so this session must have gone wrong, what this almost means is that I used zero CPU usage in order to display information. Now, that's pretty good. That's pretty impressive. I hope you get that away from this session, that Maarten showed us how to not use the processor and still execute an application. I'm completely curious here. What should have happened is also that I should also have memory in use. Well, apparently I don't have that either. So the application not only did not use the processor, but it also did not need any memory. Now, if this would have been a Windows 8 session, or even a Windows Phone 8 session, well, with a Windows Phone 8 session, I mean, there were one or two sessions. I think they had engineering devices. You could say, like, hey, it's an engineering device. Windows Phone sessions, you can say, like, hey, we are just not yet released. Unfortunately, we have been released, so cannot even get away with that. Let me try this one more time and hope that it's going to work this time. I'm not going to switch anything anymore. I'm also not going to fake. Or am I? Oh, yeah, that's bad because I don't have that stuff. Okay, I'm going to do it different because I still want to show you that, behavior. So let me just take a baked one here. So this was one of those profiling sessions that I recorded earlier when yesterday, in front of the mirror, I was practicing for this talk. The behavior is the same because the application is the same. And it's now more important to, you know, like get to some conclusions instead of, you know, like waiting for a profiler to do its work. So I'm going to go full screen again once this log file has been analyzed again. And again, you see the same story is applicable. These are large files. I mean, I noticed that it's like half a gigabyte of information, and that needs to be analyzed and blah, blah, blah. What you can see, though, is that this time, where's my full screen? I actually was using the CPU, which is so cool. Also, what's happening is that I'm allocating memory, and what I can do now is select an area where, for instance, the frame rate looks like scary. And what it's saying is that, hey, that low frame rate, the reason for that is that I am using a very complex layout mechanism inside my application. So that's the first hint. I have a very complex layout mechanism. What that means in real language for me, for instance, would be like, hey, you're probably using elements in your list box that have a variable size. Now, if that's the case, then I could fix something. The other thing what you can see inside this application, if you take a look at its memory, is that from start we immediately have quite some memory, around 7.5 seconds. If you remember when I started this session, the thing was I tapped on my screen, around 8 seconds I was starting to load data. So this is the influence of getting data from a web server. And then later on, images came to my application and became visible. Well, here you see a whole bunch of images being loaded, and you see that memory going excessively high to over 100 megabyte. So there's clearly an issue there. So that's something I need to work on. So now I can go back to my code. For that, I'm taking that original project that we were working on. And the first thing I can do is take a look at what I'm having here right now. So I'm going to go to my list because that list somehow is suspect. And the list, well, here is that list. The first list is on the first panorama page. And what you can see is that I added an items panel. And in that items panel, I just declare a stack. What this means is this is an indicator to the runtime later that, hey, every list element that is necessary for me to display, I want to keep that resident in memory. So I'm not making use of the virtualizing stack panel right now because that's the default. By deleting this, I'm going to make use of the virtualizing stack panel, meaning I only need to keep an amount of elements in memory just enough to show list information, so list elements to the user, with one page before and one page below it. If the user scrolls, then we're just dynamically loading more information as is needed. Now, for my second page, I'm just going to leave that normal stack panel, because there I only have a few entries, and I'm going to show that later to you, but there I only have like 20 entries or something, and then it makes sense to not have that virtualizing overhead. Another thing is that I'm displaying my list box items. I'm using one single template to display two different types of information, and that second type of information does not contain a picture. So what I could do is optimize there a little bit. So let me go ahead and do that. So in order to do that, I'm just going to open a notepad file. And in that notepad file is a little template. I'm going to take that template. All right. I'm going to put that in my XAML here. Because here I have one generic template right now. And in that template I have an image, and that image doesn't have any size. So I'm just taking the image in the size that it comes to me from that web service. So now what I'm going to do, though, is I'm going to copy a new data template. Inside that data template, I now have a picture track template. And my image, I'm now going to make sure that I'm limiting my width to 45 pixels and my height to 60 pixels. So now each image that's going to be pulled down from that web service at least will get the same size. I could even optimize more, and I'm doing that also, because I'm also saying, like, hey, the minute you will get an image URI, well, at that time, load that image, but do that on a background thread. And that's indicated by my create options, background creation. So I'm not occupying the UI thread to actually pull down that image, which makes a lot of sense too. Now, what I need to do, though, is change my first page to make use of that new image template. Oops. This was wrong, because I need to do that in my list, of course. So here in my list box, I'm going to make use not of a track template, but of a picture track template. And the second one, I'm still going to use that track template. Now, having those changes, I'm going to build. And then we're going to see what kind of an influence this has. So I'm going to show the device. the minute I'm going to start debugging. So here we go again to that Windows Phone device. Let me make sure that the device is on. Cool. And let's start. And let's go to the device. Hopefully we're starting. Yeah, there we go. We're starting. And loading is still going to take a long time because I'm still, you know, like loading a lot of elements. But what you also can see on the side here is that there is some information visible already. So some tracks have been loaded already. Now here is the rest. What you can see is all those pictures now have at least the same size. There are not, some are not larger than others. And I also have a shorter list. Well, that shorter list is my favorite tracks, which is only 20 favorite tracks or something. And this is my last played tracks, which I stored on Last.fm, which is like 200. So this is a great candidate for virtualization. The other list is a great candidate to keep every information in memory. But I'm still not happy because my startup time is still not good enough. And the reason for that is that I'm loading 200 tracks at one time. Now, the most dramatic performance influencer is the one that I'm going to show right now. So let's just go back to the slide deck for right now. Let me terminate this application. And let's make sure that we go back to the slides. And let's talk about something else. So the thing that influences performance dramatically is the usage of threads. What I already said is that the UI thread is the one that you want to keep as unoccupied as possible. By not executing code on the UI thread, what that means is that the UI thread can exclusively update the user interface, and the user interface is the part that the user will actually see. So performance will immediately go to the user through the user interface thread. There are a couple of other threads that are important. A compositor thread that will be used for animations as long as those animations can be cached inside a bitmap. So if they are not complex animations, we can make use of that. There's a touch thread, so if you're using gestures on your phone, what that means is that, hey, they will be called in a separate thread, also for performance improvements. And there's a couple of background threads. Background threads are the threads that we are creating to process or to execute code in the background. And it used to be that it's kind of hard to create background threads because you have to create a thread object through a callback or something. You have to think about, hey, especially in exception handling, if something is going wrong, do I need to do housekeeping or something? It gives you a complete different mindset from synchronous programming, because what you're basically doing is asynchronous programming. And that's something that is, you know, like kind of hard for a lot of developers, because asynchronous programming just increases complexity of your application. The cool part, though, is that with, you know, like since 2 years or something, and I don't know if many people are aware of that, but we have the possibility to make use of the async CTP, which is a separate download. That download comes, you know, like from some website from Microsoft. It integrates in Visual Studio, and what you get is the task parallel library plus a number of new keywords being async and await. And with the async CTP, what you can do is program asynchronously in a synchronous manner. So for us, it seems like we are developing applications that are running synchron, but they are not really. So having said that, it's also cool because if you look at Windows 8 Metro-style applications, they are built really by making use extensively of the async functionality. Windows Phone 8 will make use of that functionality as well. So if you start working with asynchronous behavior right now, today, for your Windows Phone 7.5 applications, and you know by definition that Windows Phone 7.5 applications will run on Windows Phone 8, and you also know that async is the future, then you're really investing in the future right now. So what I want to do is the last 5 minutes, spend some time and show asynchronous programming in action. So we're going to just extend our application again. I'm going to go back to the development machine. And since we have 5 minutes, there's time for some water, right? We have time enough because async is easy. So let's go ahead. And what I need to do is, what I want to do right now is make sure that I'm just going to load a few pieces of information from a web service at a time. What I now did was, you know, like in this example for Last.fm, I took 200 tracks, and those 200 tracks were, you know, like pulled in immediately at one time. What I want to do is limit that and get 10 tracks at a time and continuously spin off some background threads. In order to do that, what I need to do is keep track of what tracks I am currently downloading. And what that means, and for time speed, so what, let me just quickly show you how I'm getting track information. Let me go full screen here. So what I'm doing is simply making use of a REST API. I have a very secret API key. This is actually live data from me as a user. And I'm passing commands to that Last.fm web service. And it also returns to me the current page that I pulled information from. I'm going to use that current page in the next version to know how many tracks I downloaded, because I don't want to download all the tracks that I listened to since I subscribed to Last.fm, because that will be like over 50,000 tracks or something. That's a little much, so I still want to limit this to 200. In order to do that, what I'm going to do is add a new version of this track feed source file to my code. So I'm just going to add that in. Add existing item, which should be on the desktop. A new version of track feed. Where is it? There. Okay. Cool. The next thing I'm going to do is make use of async programming. In order to do that, what I'm going to do is add a reference. And I'm going to add a reference to the async CTP. If you install the async CTP, it will be installed in a folder in your documents. And it's the Microsoft Visual Studio Async CTP. Under that is samples. If you already have Visual Studio installed and you try to do that, sometimes there are issues in installing that properly. We can talk offline to fix those issues if you ran into them. We just don't have time to do that right now. So I'm going to go to samples, and under samples, what you will see is a Windows Phone async library. Okay? I have that in there. And the other thing I need to do is now go to my code where I'm actually retrieving track information, which is in my main page view model. I'm going to go full screen here. And inside this file, what's happening is here I have a method getTracks. In getTracks, I'm retrieving tracks. I'm doing that for each track feed I'm interested in, and I'm just taking a web client and subscribe to an event, download that stuff asynchronously, and if my download is completed, then I'm going to try and get feed results out, and I'm going to update my track information with that. And that's all event-based, right? So I'm just going to delete this. I'm going to pull in something else. I'm going to explain the code that I'm going to pull in here, which is my async code. So let me quickly get that inside that solution here. Okay. Now, what I need to do first is make sure that I'm going to use at using system.threading.tasks. And now my asynchronous code is going to look like this. I'm still having a get tracks, but this time I'm going to retrieve tracks async. And what you can see here is that I have an async keyword. And if I'm retrieving tracks, what's going to happen is that I'm going to wait for a track subset. And the await keyword indicates, like, hey, I'm going to call out to something, and in the future, at some time, there will be information for you. And what the C# compiler generates for you right now in intermediate language is something like a thread. So underwater, they're creating a thread, but we don't have to worry about it. Now, if I'm taking a look at that async method here, it returns a task of type list of type track. So it's a list of tracks basically packed inside a task. And I'm now calling on my web client asynchronously, and I'm waiting for 10 tracks to be downloaded. And I'm doing that in a loop, and then I'm using a little link to actually extract track information from a piece of XML that I'm getting back. So if we are executing this same application one more time now, and it looks like I'm going to run 2 minutes over, I hope you don't mind, but then we, you know, like have kind of covered everything. Let's take a look at the application as it's going to run right now. So we're going to go again to the device. I'm going to start inside the debugger. So boom, there we go. And we should be able to see that. So let's see. I'm still deploying. Now we are starting. Here is the application, hopefully. Boom. And there should be track information right now as well. Well, that's what I was hoping. And of course, I'm working with a data connection. What you can see is that there's a little less track information, and track information is downloaded while we are, speaking. Because if I take a look at my tracks, what you now can see is that, hey, I have multiple track updates, and I have a very, very slow data connection right now. That was the reason why it still is not behaving the way I was kind of hoping for. But you get the idea, hopefully, that async programming, it looks like we are programming synchronously, but I'm now getting tracks, you know, like at a time. And you can see how slow that data connection right now is, because it's taking almost 20 seconds to get 10 tracks of information there. Well, that's what I thought, but that's wrong, because actually... Let me stop this real quick, because now I found out that I made an error here. It's not a slow data connection, but I'm creating an incredible amount of data, actually. Because what I said is that, hey, I now only want to have 10 tracks at a time and not 200. So my excuse was a lame excuse, actually. And I'm going to start with page number 1. I'm going to do that here, too. We'll start with page number 1 here as well. Add a comma there and add a comma there. Let me try that again. So hopefully now it shows a little better. So we go again to the phone. The phone is downloading. We're deploying the application. There's the application up and running. And let's see what's happening. Start, boom, boom. So this is the performance that I really wanted to have. Now, if I'm scrolling through, you can see that at sometimes there's more information. Because if a user would have this behavior, then you would maybe get a bad impression. But my assumption is that the user wants to read each and every bit of information there and slowly scrolls. And then loading in the background just makes a lot of sense, of course. There are a few more things you can do if you want to optimize your code. That's kind of sneaky stuff. What you need to do is make your assemblies as small as possible. So if you have large images in there, make sure to make them smaller or something. Make sure to remove any redundant XAML. I already did that, as you saw, when I removed that progress indicator. I also immediately removed all the redundant XAML there. I still have a high-resolution picture in here. Because of time, I'm just going to leave that. But my assembly is still too large now. I could have done that. That panoramic picture could have been way smaller. There are some creepy things that you can do. And those creepy things are the following. I need to show that to you, I think. The creepy things are the following. What you can do eventually is, if you take a look at my XAML, is it's going to look like this in the end. So for fastest application, I'm going to use my XAML unlined, so I'm going to even remove every blank space out of here. Oh, oops. I'm going to remove any blank space out of my XAML. The reason to do that is that my the interpreter has to work less. And the other thing you could consider, and that's because of the processes we are using, is the following. If you are calling out frequently to methods, that's very inefficient on a Snapdragon ARM processor that we are using in our phones. The problem with that is that those processors have a lot of registers, and each function call we need to store stack information on those registers. So instead of calling to functions, if you just code everything in line, then you're going to get some dramatic improvements as well. So those are a few tips that at least are, you know, like worth considering. Performance is crucial. You need to know what you're doing inside your application. It's very, very important. Don't do anything unless you need to. That's important as well. And don't wait for Windows Phone 8, but start developing Windows Phone 7.5 applications now. They will run on Windows Phone 8 devices, and take advantage of async. That's very important. And with that, I think we are going to be kicked out of the room, but I have one last thing to do. So my question is, what is the biggest improvement in performance? What technique are you going to use to get the biggest in async? And that's, you pointed to you, so, well, congratulations. Here's a Lumia 900 for you, and thank you very much for your attention. Have a great conference for the rest.